Our scripture this morning comes from both the Gospel of John and the Gospel of Matthew, from John 21, verses 15 through 17. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And Peter said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." Matthew chapter 25, verses 35 through 40. Familiar words. "For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me." The righteous will answer him, "Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? When was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? When was it that we saw you in prison or sick and visited you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these, who are members of my family, you did it to me." It is a great joy to be here this morning. This is a very special church, and it's a great joy to be with you. And thank you for this invitation. Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me, Peter? That triple question, which the resurrected Jesus asked Peter, is reminiscent of Peter's triple denial of knowing Jesus after the arrest of Jesus. And the question comes to us as well. How do we love Jesus? What did Jesus say? "Feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep." Feeding and caring for those whom God loves. That's how we love Jesus. And Jesus taught the very same lesson in the other story as well, how to love Jesus. A story told towards the end of the Gospel of Matthew. You heard it. "I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me." This morning it is my privilege to share pictures and stories with you of the way that you and I, through the United Church of Christ, are actively loving Jesus through ministries of feeding and healing and teaching people here in the United States and especially around the world. And the Wider Church Ministries is the new name in the last decade or less of a very old organization, the 200-year-old American Board of Commissioners of Foreign Missions, which was the name that some of the folks in the congregational churches in New England gave to the organization they started to send missionaries out to other parts of the world. The very first American mission organization, sending organization in our country, in our Northern Hemisphere even. The name changed from the ABCFM, the American Board of Commissioners for Foreign Missions, several times to most recently Wider Church Ministries of the United Church of Christ. But the mission has stayed the same even with updated nuances. To journey together with people in other countries, demonstrating the love of God known to us in Jesus Christ. For 200 years, the United Church of Christ has nurtured this faith, this work, and these relationships, some born 200, 150, many, many years ago, but fresh today as well. First, let me explain that I was incredibly privileged to serve for 6 years as the executive minister of Wider Church Ministries of the UCC. And in that capacity, I was able to travel around to visit our missionaries and our mission partners all around the world. So you're going to see just a very few of my many pictures of and stories of that experience. The UCC has chosen in recent years, in the past 20 or so years, to do most of our global ministry, which relates to our partner churches, hospitals, schools, colleges, agricultural programs, church development, in partnership with the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, the disciples. So I also was able to serve as the co-executive of our common UCC and Disciples global ministries. Global Ministries is the organization then in whose name the mission partners welcome us and invite us, if they wish, to send missionaries to work with them. Your financial support of our church's wider mission, OCWM, supports this common global ministry of the UCC and Disciples. OCWM supports the staff, most of our missionaries, our relationships with partners around the world. So thank you for your regular support of OCWM through your local church budget. Your money does amazing work, spreading God's love in very tangible ways, feeding, healing, teaching, and helping. Additionally, I also want to bring you deep gratitude for your personal donations to support the annual One Great Hour of Sharing special offering. OGHS enables the UCC to provide support to refugees around the world, medical mission projects, programs to alleviate world hunger, and to respond to natural disasters here in the U.S. as well as around the world. Thank you, so I say, for your gift to One Great Hour of Sharing, that special offering that most churches usually take in March of the year. Here at Cocoa Beach Community Church, UCC, you surely love Jesus. I could tell from our experience worshiping with you last year, last winter, and from various stories and pictures on your church website, and from what I know personally. When did you see Jesus hungry and feed him, or sick, or homeless, or thirsty? From CBCC's impressive church website, we see some clues as to how you minister to Jesus, how you love Jesus. You feed hungry people through the Cocoa Beach Community Meals that was spoken of this morning. You pray for people who are sick. You offer a support group for people who are grieving. You almost literally clothe the naked with your thrift shop. You help people made homeless through hurricanes, tsunamis, and earthquakes through the Wider Florida Conference and UCC Disaster Ministries, which you learned even more about from Bill Whelan speaking here in September. You seek to understand people of different faiths and to deepen your own faith and spiritual growth through your Center for Spiritual Enlightenment and book discussion on Christian identity in a multi-faith world. You demonstrate your love for Jesus in all those and many other ways. When and where else do you love Jesus? Where else have you seen Jesus hungry and given him something to eat? Beyond what we do what you do here in Cocoa Beach through this one special local church, working together with other local churches across the UCC and the Disciples, we can all do so much more than any one church could do all by itself. When did we in the UCC see Jesus hungry on the other side of the globe and feed him? This is one example. Through one great hour of sharing and our church's wider mission, you helped supply much-needed food for the Thai-Burma border refugee camps. Our one great hour of sharing supports displaced people around the world who've had to flee their homes or flee their country even because of persecution, war, famine, disasters. Like these people who live in refugee camps in Thailand along the border with Burma, Myanmar. They were pushed out of their homes. There were racial and ethnic minorities, rural people, pushed out of their own country by their harsh military dictatorship over several decades. Most of the refugees in this camp, when we visited several years ago, have been there for more than 10 years at that point. All these children were born in that camp. Other refugees have arrived more recently, forced out of their country too, by Burma, by the repression that was particularly heavy in 2007, in the fall. Thailand, where these camps are located, does not officially admit that there are any refugees in Thailand. They have not signed the United Nations Protocol on refugees, so the UN can't really run these camps. But the churches around the world have come together to support these camps. We do that through Church World Service. The churches have been especially helpful in providing food for the camps because the people are not really allowed to grow much of anything in this small camp that they have to stay inside of. There are a number of these camps. Feed my sheep. The elected leaders here in the picture inside the camp pretty much run the camp, since the UN is not doing that, organizing the people for various public duties and providing teachers for the children. Experts say that these are some of the best-run refugee camps in the world. They're still a very difficult place to live. In recent years, Thailand has begun to allow people to leave the camps if they can find sponsorship in another country. Otherwise, they stay locked inside those gates. The U.S. agreed to take several thousand Burmese, so some of the refugees are now being sponsored by UCC churches with your help through One Great Hour of Sharing as well. And just this summer, the Thai-Burma Border Consortium connected with the new leadership in Burma, in Myanmar, to begin to get ready to help the 160,000 people that are in these camps eventually return home when that is possible. And I understand that the president, when he visits Myanmar tomorrow, will be talking about the importance of continuing to open their country and to have a better record on human rights. And hopefully they will welcome these people back. It is amazing how far our dollars and our compassion can spread, taking God's love to people in need. Thank you. When did we see Jesus thirsty and give him a cup of water? Global Ministries and our church partners in China, in this picture, have dug more than 70, in fact, that was when we were there in 2009, wasn't it, Frank? So probably more than that now, wells in very rural villages, which have had absolutely no safe, clean drinking water before. Give a cup of water to someone who's thirsty. Charity, yes, but it's also a life-saving gift, because water is absolutely essential for human life. Having a well in a village means not only less illness with clean, safe water now, but also it means that girls can go to school and women have time for other chores, since they don't have to spend so many hours walking miles to bring back a bucket of water. Global Ministries works with church partners on similar projects in a number of places, such as Kenya and Mozambique, pictures here, where, like so many places around the world, people have to walk so far for water. Now they have water in their own village. With water being, this is the well for that village that we just saw, with water being turned into a commodity for profit, or water rights being denied to people who had traditionally, their ancestors for generations, used certain streams and sources of water, but whose land and water are now being taken over by developers or mining companies, people are now predicting that there will be more unrest and wars in this 21st century fought over water than oil. We'll see. Making sure people have access to drinking water, as well as water to irrigate their crops and to wash in, is a matter of justice, education, and advocacy, as well as direct service. Advocating in the halls of power, whether that's with the United States Congress, the UN, or a bottling company. When did we see Jesus as a stranger and welcome him? Your church website and your bulletin announced the good news of the gospel in said with the UCC's contemporary new slogan, "No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you are welcome here." It's exactly the message of welcome you have also in your bulletin. Way to go. Keep on putting those words into practice in welcoming Jesus. Our churches across this country are doing the same. When did we see Jesus naked and clothe him? Beyond the thrift shop, around the world. In Egypt, the United Church of Christ has long worked with both the Protestant churches, primarily they're Presbyterian, and the Orthodox churches in Egypt and their social service organizations. Christians are a minority in Egypt, but are spreading God's inclusive love by trying to make poor neighborhoods a better place to live. The Protestant organization, Coptic Evangelical Organization for Social Service, CEOSS, C-E-O-S-S, works with both Christians and Muslims, as you can tell from the headscarves in the picture. This is a community organizing project where local people are trained to help each neighborhood identify its priorities. This particular neighborhood that we visited had decided they wanted to target help for girls to go to school. And they wanted to help women, like the woman in the picture, who was divorced by her husband and left to support herself and her daughter with no resources. Single divorced women have a very hard life in that society. But good news. Through our partner, CEOSS, we were able to give that woman a $100 microcredit loan so that she could rent this tiny little space, about the size of a closet, to start a neighborhood store and purchase goods to sell. And I believe that's also where she and her daughter lived. And within 6 months, she had paid back the loan and also had enough money to buy a uniform and books so that her daughter could go to school. She then got a new loan for another $100 to purchase more supplies to sell. The woman was thrilled and asked me to tell the churches in the United States, thank you. In global ministries, the number one priority has been to supply healthcare workers to our partners who ask for them. In recent years, we sent a brand new young missionary couple from the UCC Church in Minnesota to work with our partner, the Protestant Church of East Timor, one of the newest countries in the whole world, which had fought its way out from under the oppressive Indonesian regime and became a separate country, very fragile country, very fragile democracy, very fragile church. They had not had experience of leadership in those decades of oppression and colonialism. In many rural areas, there is no medical care. Tom and Monica Little studied the local language in the capital city of East Timor before they moved out to a very isolated village, a small village, where Monica was the only physician, actually she was the only healthcare worker, for miles around. So she was able to staff a little clinic where people came from a long distance for her help. And she was able to train others as well. When they first went out there, they had a precious 5-year-old daughter. And since they've been there, they had another baby. So they now have 2 children. Tom worked with the church in leadership development work, and also he's a real handy fix-it man carpenter. He did a lot of work around the clinic and the churches. In India, where a historic mission hospital was run down and dying, a vibrant young Indian-American couple, Drs. Anil and Teresa Henry, has completely revitalized the hospital, which now serves as the only healthcare facility in its location. The leadership of our partner church in Haiti, CONUSPE, the National Spiritual Council of Churches of Haiti, asked us to send a doctor to them. Their churches have two very small clinics, and each one is not much more than a little room with a medicine cabinet, probably with maybe some aspirin, if they were lucky, maybe some Band-Aids. Kim Bentrop is a physician, and Patrick, a seminary graduate, worked on leadership development with the church. One great hour of sharing supports each of these physicians to serve and to teach others how to do basic primary care in their community. When was Jesus in prison? And we visited him. ALAS, A-L-A-S, our partner in Peru, has worked for years providing legal assistance to political prisoners serving incredibly long sentences, and then providing social services to the prisoners after they were released. We have partnered with ALAS to offer job training and to support income generation projects for prisoners who are released. One group of former prisoners has started this restaurant, for example. Prisons in Peru don't provide meals, so families of the prisoners bring food to the prison, and the group of men that are pictured here had been in prison together. They learned to enjoy cooking together in prison, and once they got out, they turned their energy into an income-producing business. Through your support of our church's wider mission, you have visited those political prisoners in the name of Jesus. And Jesus might as well have said, I was homeless and you provided shelter for me. You reach much farther than you have ever realized. Through your church's contributions to our church's wider mission and to the special appeals for emergency disaster relief, you also have helped send volunteers from many UCC churches across the country. They went to New Orleans year after year after 2005, the Gulf Coast, here in Florida, to help rebuild houses after hurricanes, and to the Midwest in places like Cedar Rapids to help people recover from flooding. Most recently, your UCC donations were rushed to help people who were hurt by the Hurricane Sandy in the Northeast. By organizing volunteer labor and soliciting material donations wherever possible, the church stretches those mission dollars much, much farther than it would go if we just handed out cash to people who had lost their house. You have reached even farther through the UCC, reaching out to our partners in the Philippines when typhoons hit and floods come, in Indonesia after earthquakes, in Japan when the tsunami hit. Our mission dollars were sent quickly to help in those places and many more. I'm going to tell you an illustrated story that I personally witnessed in the Philippines several years ago, where our gifts to One Great Hour of Sharing enabled the UCC to respond to a request from our partner church in a small disaster that wouldn't have made the front page of our newspapers or the TV news in that naturally beautiful country. The United Church of Christ in the Philippines, they call themselves the UCCP and they call us the UCC USA. That church is 10 years older as a united church than the UCC USA. They were formed bringing together congregational, Presbyterian, disciples, some Methodist churches into a united church in the 1940s. Shortly before my visit, the island of Leyte was hit by torrential rains, which literally caused part of the mountain to just wash down into the valley. The mudslide covered entirely the town of Gintogan, and it killed all of the inhabitants in just minutes. Some of the people who were out in the fields tried to run, and they were overcome as well. And it wasn't just mud. Huge boulders, came rolling down the mountain, and the mud dried quickly into almost a kind of cement, covering even three-story buildings. Several of the nearby villages also had to be evacuated. When I was there some weeks later, I was able to go back into one of the villages that had been closed closest to the mudslide, because on that day I was there, it was a sunny, dry Sunday morning, and it was safe enough for people to return in the daylight for a few hours to their old church for worship. I realized that in that church, in that village, as I looked around, there were little kids and there were bigger kids, but there weren't any fifth, sixth grade type age kids, because the fifth and sixth grade school had been located in Ginzhougen. So all those children had been killed. The high school was located in another village, and all the high school students survived, but their families were wiped out from that village. I gave all the people in worship that day a stick-on UCC comma, and I told them the story of Gracie Allen. You know the story behind the comma, of Gracie Allen leaving a note in her papers that her husband, George Burns, would find and then read after her death. She wrote, "Never place a period where God has placed a comma. See you later, George." That story and those comma stickers meant a great deal to the people in that church and that village. The survivors in those villages that were nearby could not move home again because of the danger of more mudslides, so we have helped to build brand new houses for them in the safer area, and also to teach them some agricultural methods for different kinds of crops because they were in a different environment. Providing Jesus with shelter. Your generosity makes possible quick responses to natural disasters, as well as advocacy efforts, which our partners request us to make with our government. The earthquake in Haiti in 2010, and you saw the pictures, was one of the worst disasters in the world that we've ever seen in terms of the loss of lives, the number of people made homeless, the almost total devastation of the capital city, the infrastructure. The church, of course, was already in Haiti before the earthquake. Our partners, the National Spiritual Council of Churches of Haiti, CONUSPE, started out more than 25 years ago by bringing together about 50 small, unaffiliated churches, bringing them together to support each other. And we have been partners with CONUSPE for almost those 25 years. In recent years, we've included children in their schools in our Global Ministries Child Sponsorship Program, which supports children in a number of different countries. CONUSPE now has about 6,700 churches and almost a million members located in the poorest of the very poor neighborhoods in that poorest country in our hemisphere. It is a socially stratified society, and the members of these churches have pretty much been at the bottom of the social and economic and even, unfortunately, religious hierarchy. And these churches are dedicated to eliminating the racism and exclusion that they've experienced in their society. The churches are located all across Haiti. But their main building, which housed a school, their headquarters offices, a nursing school, and one of the small clinics where our missionary doctors saw patients, was a six-story building, totally collapsed. Fortunately, the earthquake happened shortly after the hour that the children had been sent home from school. However, there was a nursing class in session, and almost all the nurses died in that collapse of that building. Global Ministries worked with CONUSPE on their emergency relief program and is continuing to walk with them and in the years to come as they continue to recover and rebuild. They have built the new building. The UCC is also part of several ecumenical organizations which work together in emergencies and disasters. In the UCC, we are Church World Service. through Church World Service and our other partner denominations that are in Church World Service, we have distributed thousands, more than thousands, hundreds of thousands of hygiene kits and baby kits and blankets. When you walk in the local crop walk, you raise money for Church World Service. Church World Service is also part of a global ecumenical organization called ACT Alliance, Action by Churches Together Alliance. Through ACT Alliance, we work with England's Christian Aid organization, and they had staff in Haiti. We did not, but they had staff in Haiti before the earthquake. These two men on the left in this picture were both buried under the rubble for a couple of days, but were rescued. And this is where they had worked. Experts estimated that 80 to 90% of Port-au-Prince was destroyed. Even buildings that looked okay from the outside were damaged so badly that they have had to be or will still have to be torn down. Through Christian Aid, the UCC helped provide food to hungry people in the tent camps. Besides pulling people out of the rubble immediately, the other most important immediate issue after the earthquake was water. We humans, as we said, can't live very long without it. Our ACT partner, Norwegian Church Aid, specializes for the ecumenical community in water and sanitation. So they loaded up a plane on the very day after the earthquake to send engineers and equipment to get clean water and latrines up and running in some of the camps, where some of the places where people were camped out. We rushed UCC donations to assist ACT and Norwegian Church Aid to do that work. One note is to remember that 100% of the money that you give for any disaster relief through the UCC, through wider church ministries, whether it's U.S. disaster or overseas, goes directly to meet the needs of the people affected by the disaster. That's because you have already supported through OCWM, our church's wider mission, the staff and the infrastructure and the work with the partners. You've already supported that so that the relief money can go directly to the need. You don't need to be supporting executive ministers' salaries and such as that with the relief money. You can't find that happening in very many organizations. Most other organizations have to use part of your relief money for their infrastructure, for their staff. Of course, Red Cross, World Vision, Save the Children, all of those do. The same is true for the UCC Child Sponsorship Program in Haiti, as well as in countries from Palestine here to rural China, from Zimbabwe to the Philippines, and several other places. 100% of the money that you give to sponsor a child, and my husband and I just realized, oh, our payment for this year's child is due. We're going to go home this afternoon and write that check. And it goes 100% to the church partners. They work with our partner churches in other countries to support the child in the orphanage and school of the partner. 100% of your donations to child sponsorship or other disaster relief then goes to meet the needs of the people. And we know that feed my sheep means much more than just physical food, food for the body. It also means food for the mind, food for the spirit, so that we can love God with all our heart, our mind, and our soul. In many places around the world, the UCC continues this 200-year-old work of spreading God's word through sending missionaries who teach in our partner seminaries in other countries, through sending books or financial support for new churches. Sometimes our staff is involved in teaching ministries, which lead to greater love of God and reconciliation with God's children everywhere. So my final story about that kind of thing comes from Nepal. In that beautiful country, in southern Asia, where until recently it was against the law to evangelize, Christian leaders asked us to partner with them to try to organize what they call a brand new National Christian Council of Nepal. And I was invited to accompany our Southern Asia Area Executive for Global Ministries, Dr. James Vijayakumar, and He and I are the people with the orange leis, flowered leis in that picture, to a regional conference for the churches in one part of Nepal. And people had walked, some of them, 2 or 3 days to get to that conference. And then they slept on the ground once they got there. These brand new Christians were converted very recently by fundamentalist missionaries, usually from India. They are hungry for a deeper understanding of the Bible and the Christian faith. One man came up to me after I had shared stories with the group about how churches live in other countries and how they relate to their communities and work to make their communities a better place to live. He said to me, "Thank you so much for opening me up to a bigger understanding of the Christian faith." So when I was converted, I was taught that I was never again to look at a Hindu temple. And if I saw one by accident, I was to spit on the ground and run away as fast as possible. A woman came up to my colleague Vijay and said, "You mean it's okay for me to go back and visit my mother in my old village? She's dying. I hadn't seen her in the years since I became a Christian because when I was converted, they told me I had to cut all ties with people that weren't Christian. Thank you for your message of inclusion." On the final day of that conference in Nepal, the group elected officers and adjourned as a Christian conference. And then after lunch, they reopened as an interfaith gathering to which they had invited the local government authorities, the social service organizations, and also a Hindu priest, a Muslim leader, a Sikh, and even a Maoist politician. Each of the guests was invited to speak to the gathering, and one after another they proclaimed, "Thank you, Christians, for bringing us together. This is the first time we've ever all been in one place together. Now we can work together to create the new Nepal." All of that work is still very, very fragile and difficult, so I ask your prayers for those folks. "Truly I say unto you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it unto me." Isn't it a blessing to be part of the wider United Church of Christ, where we can do so much more together than any one church could ever do alone? Thank you once more, Cocoa Beach Community, United Church of Christ, for feeding Jesus' sheep. Amen.